Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back. This time we're recording on a Thursday for a Thursday delivery. We kind of wanted to let the news accumulate a little bit, and there is some news, so we'll touch on it. Some of it's going to be the inside the cage news, you know, the athletics that we come from for mixed martial arts, the fighting, the face punching, and of course some of it's going to be a controversy, man, that is crazy. And you know, an MMA fighter told me something interesting on social media, and we'll discuss that as well. So yeah, Dana White got COVID. Kevin Lee, he's cut from the UFC. So we got Font versus Aldo this weekend. And then, you know, stuff coming across the table from other organizations or stuff that, you know, is in relation to mixed martial arts. And we also got to give some love to Bellator. Their final card of the year, they got a title fight, Pettis Horiguchi. Not only are they ready to go, they've already weighed in. So we'll talk about all that. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, December 2nd. Goes, I was perusing Twitter last night, and you know, I remember Isaac Valley Flag, who competed in mixed martial arts for a long time. Now he's dabbling in bare knuckle, and somebody we've gotten to know a little bit through just interviewing him, you know, I believe on Facebook chats, Triple G, MMA Junkie Radio, just a kind of a cool cat, you know, that we keep in touch with.
Mm-hmm.
He was basically hinting at something that I've just been noticing as well, and that's just this sport is unlike any other. It's very compelling, very interesting. It's hard to get away from, which, by the way, how Dan Henderson just doesn't have much interest in mixed martial arts, like he told us many times earlier this month, is beyond me, because, like I say, it's a lot, man. So Isaac Valley Flag, I believe a good follow on Twitter, at IkeVF. He says MMA's wild. He kept it simple. And I go, you ain't lying. Outside the cage news, just as nutty as what transpires inside the cage, if that's what you're implying. He goes, yep. And remember, Isaac Valley Flag has been a longtime member of Jackson Wink. So I think that was just a subtle nod to everything that's going down between John Jones and Mike Winklejohn. To be fair, I should have included that in the intro. We're definitely going to discuss that, but just
I thought that was the controversy.
That is the controversy, yeah.
Yeah, your intro had me going all kinds of places because it could have covered so many things. I thought maybe you had a hidden gem, but that's what you were talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's nuts.
What do you think of MMA? Do you love it more? Do you love it the same? Do you love it less because of the way that it's just grown on us in many different ways, its popularity, its status amongst other sports?
Technically, I guess I would have to say I love it less. Because if you're going to compare the way I love the sport now to the way I loved it back when Pride was around, it's different. It's way, way different. I think there's something to not having a card every weekend. It would make me look forward to things a little bit more. Like when I mentioned some of these Grand Prix and Pride, you know, when they would happen, you'd be like, oh my God, you couldn't wait. You know, 3 weeks away, 2 weeks away, we're almost there. Now it's like there's a card every week, and you kind of know who maybe the main and the co-main are. But somewhere around this time, Wednesday or Thursday, you go, oh shit, that guy's on this card? You know, that type of stuff happens. I don't hate on it because it is a sport that I love, but I would probably say I like it a little less than I used to. I have to, I guess. I have to admit that.
Well, the action's much better.
Mm-hmm. The level of competition, I mean, everything's shot through the roof. It's just you know, when you add in certain fighters not getting what they deserve, not getting title shots, you have to be exciting. I mean, there's all there's some of that drama too, you know, that kind of makes it suck a little bit more as a fan, but yeah.
Let's unpack some of this news. So John Jones kind of went on a meltdown yesterday, and he blasted his former coach, Mike Winklejohn, in a series of tweets. These two split ways earlier this year, if you'll recall, I guess what you could say is Mike Winklejohn banned him from the gym. And so Greg Jackson and Brandon Gibson, also coaches of his at Jackson Wink, they've still kind of kept in touch with John Jones and coached him outside of the gym. But I think he was just put off by basically Winklejohn going public and not – here's what it comes down to, goes, he didn't enable John Jones. You know, everybody usually just kind of rallies around John Jones no matter what he does and stays loyal to him, but doesn't scold him, doesn't show him, I guess, the repercussions of acting the way he does. You know what I mean? I think that's basically what it boils down to. And this was months ago that Mike Winklejohn did this, but I just think it stings John Jones. And right now I can't even say he probably went on a drinking binge. I wouldn't know that because the last time we checked in on him on social media, maybe like 2 weeks ago, he was getting close to 60 days. And that's usually when these, hell, not just him, but people have meltdowns when they drink or whatever, or they're lonely or depressed. But let's just say he still hasn't been drinking. It just has to be stirring inside, you know, that someone put him in his place.
Yeah. Man, I just realized I did something really stupid. So I might have to break away for about 3 minutes. But the thing about John Jones is, see, I don't know John Jones personally very well, the way I do other fighters. And I don't know Mike Winklejohn very well. You know, I'll text with him every now and again, but I don't know him that well where I could say, that's just Mike being Mike, or that's John being John. So what I do then is I base things on the experiences that I've had with them in the past, the few interactions, and then just, what does everybody else say? You know, I may not know him, but I know people that know him, and those people aren't crazy, right? And I don't know that every day when I turn on the news, I see something about Mike Winklejohn being out of his mind or unreasonable. For the most part, I don't remember very many people saying bad things about the guy. If anything, I hear good things about his coaching and his philosophies. So if you put a gun to my head and go, hey, who's wrong here? I'd probably have to go, it's probably John again, because John has done these types of things. So I know it seems like I probably come off as a John Jones hater. I think he's amazing. And if I am bitter, it's probably for the reason that I can't believe that somebody that has that much talent can throw away a career like that when it's like you're looking at Michael Jordan and Michael Jordan just decided, I'm going to throw away my career and not become Michael Jordan. I think he could have had an amazing career. And I think he could have been one of these guys that you look at like a Lionel Messi or a Ronaldo, where you just say the name and people know who the hell you're talking about. May have never seen one game of soccer, but you know who that is. I think John Jones could have been that guy.
Well, so he is that guy. He has had a great career. He's never lost. He has had a great career. He holds a lot of records. I mean, you're talking about his personal life, right?
No, but I mean, if you walk on the street and you pull someone aside and go, John Jones, they may not know who you're talking about. But if you said Cristiano Ronaldo to an old man on the strip, he might go, oh, the soccer guy. I've never seen a game, but I know who that is. I think he could have reached that level. Like if you pull someone aside and go, LeBron James, they're going to know who you're talking about. I think John Jones could have reached that level. Commercial endorsements, all that type of shit.
He could have been richer. Yeah, I agree. He could have been richer and not brought as much shame to his family.
Right.
But,
so
yeah. On the athletic side, though, I mean, what he's done is amazing.
Yeah. And even that, I think, probably could have been better. You know, it probably could have. But when you look at like what's going on in this kid's life, I think what he's just not getting the recipe. His recipe for disaster, a lot of it has to do with social media. He needs to get off of social media. It's a cancer to him. And I don't think he's realized that yet. Or maybe he does and he just doesn't care. But in his situation and everything that happened to him, just be close to your family. Just get in the gym. Come back to the cage and prove everyone wrong. But stay off of social media. Stay out of beefs. You know, quit calling people out. Like, just do your thing, man. You got to get in your lane now.
Here's the series of tweets that he put out. I'm going to try to read them just as best as I can, but I'm basically just quoting him. He says, Coach Wink gets on national TV and tells the world he wants the best for me, and then behind the scenes harassing other coaches for continuing to work with me. What a miserable bastard. I imagine that national TV must be when he did the interview with Ariel Helwani. I don't think he was at ESPN still, so I guess this was an internet streaming show. You know, just to clarify is what I'm saying. I'm not hating on the MMA Hour. It's a good show. But I imagine that's when Coach Wink is the only time he's addressed this, from what I know, right? And now let's just say that he's telling other coaches or harassing them for working with him. Okay, I understand that. That would suck because that's up to Greg Jackson and Brandon Gibson to decide. You know, now harassing or just suggesting that, hey, they're also enabling John by continuing to work with him and not showing him, not guiding him. You know, I think I kind of believe Mike Winklejohn that he wanted the best for John Jones, but who knows? All right, let's continue. This dude somehow has found a way to run away from every single one of, Greg's original fighters. I can't think of a Jackson's veteran that still talks to this asshole. So I would think some of the OGs would be like Greg Jackson, or
Diego Sanchez.
Diego Sanchez, GSP.
Cowboy
Cerrone. Yeah. And I believe most of them have just, yeah, obviously moved on, but I don't believe that all of them moved on with, you know, a hate, I guess, towards the gym. I can say I don't think GSP did. I think he just started working more with Firas Zahabi, and that was that. We all know what happened with Rashad Evans. There was a split there. But Rashad was the one that wound up leaving. And then Cowboy Cerrone, that was more recent. I just don't know that was all Winklejohn or some Jackson or what. But, okay, so let's just say that's true. You know, who knows? I don't know that it's all Winklejohn. It could have been, like I say, maybe some of it towards Greg Jackson. He continues. I didn't leave the gym because I couldn't handle a punishment. I left the gym because I wasn't with training with Wink anymore anyways. This man hasn't taught the students a new technique since I met him. So, If he wasn't working with Wink anymore, I don't know. I thought I saw Wink in his corner. If this guy's not teaching you anything, why would I see him in your corner in your last fight?
And why would you say it now? And why would it matter if it doesn't matter?
What type of a friend gets on national TV and airs his quote-unquote brother's dirty laundry? That was his opportunity to take a moral high ground over someone who trusted him. He didn't give two shits about what actually happened that night. Anything for some publicity. I don't know, because Winklejohn doesn't do many interviews, goes. And this is the first time he's ever said anything. And I thought when he expressed himself, he did it in a pretty decent manner.
I thought so, too. I think this is obviously something maybe behind the scenes that bugged him, that he heard from someone. And then he's just projecting onto this, I think. But I had to guess.
He continues, if I was such a monster, he wouldn't still be trying to monetize off me. Being a former student there, there's a John Jones poster. You know, he misspelled his own name, J-O-H-N, Jones poster, in almost every wall in the building. And that was probably the correction autocorrect. Not trying to bag on the guy, but still, when you put yourself out there like this, people are going to realize that. You know, I don't blame him for keeping a John Jones poster. That's part of the history of the gym, honestly. So I don't know that you really monetize. I mean, I suppose you're when you're trying to recruit new students to the public, yeah, you want to feature what the gym's successes have been along the way. You display trophies and pictures and all that. So I guess that is a form of monetization, but I don't think it's anything that, you know, is just super, super lucrative.
But all he's saying, is this happened here. And it did. It's true. It did happen. At one point, John Jones trained there, and he helped make him a champion. It's something that happened. You can't take that away from him. Had he taken down all those posters or whatever, the first thing John Jones would have said was, this guy's trying to erase me from the memory of this gym or from his life. And I don't know that it was that type of split. Like, I think it was kind of like when you send a kid to military school, you've probably tried everything you could, and then it turns into what we call tough love. Mm-hmm. I think that's what kind of happened here with Winkle John and John Jones.
Wink suspending me from the team changed absolutely nothing for me. I'm still working with the exact same coaches on the exact same schedule we've been over the last few years. All right. I mean, cool. And I guess this isn't really going to impact you much, but yet you're still attacking this dude. But all right. Just don't go on TV and pretend to give a shit about someone who's made you so much money over the years, giving you so many world championships, and then behind closed doors secretly try to crush them. See, that's the part I don't know what's happening. Real douchebag move, Mike. So something must have been relayed through coaches. You know, stuff that we'll never know. But I don't think I've seen many splits like this between a coach and a player, and they still give a shit about someone if they've made money together or had successes together, even though they're not together at that moment. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what to say. Like, when you think of John Jones, I've seen him do this before, but not to this extent. I want to say it was like 8 tweets, right? Or something like that. Mm-hmm. Usually, like, you get 2 or 3 out of them. So whatever it is must have really pissed him off.
I'll finish up here. He says, we literally had a convicted rapist training on the team for years, and now all of a sudden he has morals. Get out of here. He continues, Mike, the other coaches are not employed by you. They work out of your building. You tax them on their flights. I don't know if he meant to say fights. You tax them on their flights. Okay. I'm trying to put money in these men's pockets. You telling them who they can and cannot work with outside your building is just bizarre. Look, if it's not messing with their jobs at work, then I don't think you can tell Brandon Gibson you can't train with John Jones, we'll say. I don't even think it applies to Greg Jackson. I think him and Winkle John seem to be kind of like even level, you know, like co-CEOs or something like that, we'll say. So let's just say he's applying it to one of the other coaches. I mean, if Brandon Gibson's was to be teaching kids jujitsu at that time, and he pays them to pay to teach kids jujitsu or striking or whatever, and he's not because he's with John Jones, then I guess Mike Winklejohn's got a point. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out there so the audience can kind of understand, I guess, what this might be about. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Learn to keep your personal and always petty beefs to yourself. It sucks that you try to make everyone pay when you burn a bridge. You fuck with people's livelihoods. These coaches are trying to make money, not tiptoe around and only train people you're friendly with. Geez, I'd only maybe read about 6 or 7 of these. I didn't know that he kept going. Let's see here. Was that the end? Okay, Mike made this everyone's business when he went on a media tour. Now, he didn't go on a tour. I don't think he did that many interviews. Never in 1 million years would I do that to one of my boys publicly. So some of this is still feelings about the interview that he did, and I guess some of this has to do with maybe Winkle John and some coaches drama, you know, so mutual coaches drama, mutual coaches of Jackson Wink Gym and mutual coaches of John Jones outside of Jackson Wink Gym.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just all so strange, man. But like I said, the one common denominator here in this kid getting better, I think step one is you just got to get off of social media. It's not good for him.
Yeah. What did you think about Dana and the news of him getting COVID and how he's dealt with it? And I mean, we obviously hope he gets back to 100% soon. Says he's following all the protocols by how things are regulated in the state of Nevada. He is a proper promoter. He wants to do his job, but he has to follow the same rules as everyone else, and that's what he seems to be doing. Now, if you go by a 10-day window, I don't know that he'd be technically cleared just doing the math. I think he said he started, you know, this all happened, we'll say, on Thanksgiving. This is 7 days since Thanksgiving because it's 1 week, right? Well, in 2 days, it'll be 9, and that's when Aldo and Font are taking place. And, of course, I'm not trying to be the COVID police. But what he's saying is, and he has access to it, is if he tests negative a couple times in a row, then I think he feels safe enough to be around everyone else. And I think that would be right. I think that whole COVID protocol thing, you know, is a moving part. And I think it's similar to a cold, I guess. You know, they say, oh, a proper cold takes 10 days, see it through. Or when they give you amoxicillin. You know, for like an infection, you got to see this all the way through. And of course there's usually a couple left in the bottle because you just stop taking it because you feel great. But I would imagine if he does not just one negative test, but maybe a couple days in a row, two times a day, then he should be good.
Yeah, I would imagine. It's unfortunate, you know, that he got it. It sucks. People that we know have been getting this and they all kind of say the same thing. It's pretty damn brutal. So I feel bad that he got it.
I would say this, though. If somebody around him got it and had a, God forbid, the worst happened to him, then he could be exposed, you know, by that whole 10-day and all that stuff. I bet you some family can come in there with a lawsuit. But I don't like to talk about that type of stuff because you don't wish this on anyone. And this country is just so happy. Whatever. Now, I guess the big news, we're not just here to say, get well, Dana, he doesn't need that, is it's just the way he explained things where how it went down. Immediately he called Dr. Rogan and kind of followed his game plan. And, of course, however you sit on that, that could be an explosive conversation or not. They both are rich men, and they both have access to the knowledge of very smart people. And I'll keep it simple. I'm sure both sides of the aisle bring a lot of intelligence, logic, science to their arguments, and I'm sure a lot of what they all say is right. But this is more of a political thing, you know. The whole, once he started saying Rogan, you could already see the comments. It just became more of a political thing versus I hope Dana's good. I hope Dana comes back safely so he can be a great promoter on Saturday night's card.
Yeah. Look, I don't have a problem with him attacking this however way he feels comfortable. Especially, I got to imagine he's close to Rogan. He's worked with him for years. If Rogan says I did this and it worked for me and he's my friend, I might actually give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
The only beef that I have with things like that is the second you stop listening to your doctor and start listening to someone else, it just doesn't make sense for me to ever go back to a doctor ever again. Because why would it make sense that he has no idea what he's saying here? But I'm sure if you have a pain in your liver, you're not going to go, all right, doc, give me a sec. Let me just check with Joe Silva, see what he says about livers. Like, no, you usually listen to your doctor, right? So I would just say at that point, then you better be consistent the rest of your life. Like, just stop going to a doctor then. You can't trust them for one thing and not the other. That's the only thing that I kind of have problems with when people say those types of things, but whatever. Hope he gets better soon.
Yeah, I would say that last little thing, because Joe knows a lot of smart people or something like that. That's the only part where I kind of raised an eyebrow and said, there's a lot of smart people that can give you other types of advice as well that is more scientific, you know? But as long as he gets better, you know what I mean? But that little comment just kind of cracked me up, because there's a lot of other smart people that'll just tell you, get the vaccine. And to be clear, Dana White did get the vaccine. It's just that I believe he was one of the first because of his the sway that he has, the power. I believe when these things first came out, I remember he was part of some task force. I can't imagine that through his connections, even all the way to the former president, he probably didn't get vaccinated sometime, if I had to guess, maybe even as early as December of 2020. Maybe January of 2021. You and I got lucky, Goes. There was a little bit of what looked like a loophole, but it was by the law that radio and TV could get vaccinated here in Nevada. So Goes and I actually were really one of the earlier ones. And then we notified all of our friends in the same business, and they still thank us to this day. And to be fair, I guess John Morgan's the one that pointed it out to us. Mm-hmm. So you and I got it. I remember, I think it was February 27th and February 6th. Yeah, we got Pfizer 21 days apart. So the first one was on February 6th. The second one was on February 27th. Dana White more than likely got his before us. And I just believe that from what I'm reading and seeing and hearing, the efficacy of the vaccine drops as time goes on. You know, almost like any other vaccine, I imagine. Like we'll say the flu. You take a yearly shot. So for this, I imagine it's kind of something similar like that. And that's why he probably had a little bit of a rough bout. But at the same time, I didn't hear anything about hospitalization, and I didn't hear anything about death. And I don't know that it was all just from what Rogan said. I think a lot of it was some of the vaccine protected him too. Whatever was left. Could be. That's what I think. I don't know. But I'm not hoping for a bad outcome or anything. I think I just want to share with people what I've learned. And if you disagree, you disagree, man. Just don't fucking pick a fight over it. I'm just telling you, I'm trying to give you a little bit of both sides of how I think this went down. I have a good friend. I always talk about my godson, Logan, his mom. So that's my comadre in Spanish. She got it, and she said she felt like crap. She got it around the same time as us, about a week before. And she got a rough bout. She actually did have to go to ER. But she said the monoclonal antibodies is what she feels made her feel better. She didn't say anything about ivermectin or anything about a drip or anything else. She just basically stated that and rest and Gatorade and vitamins and whatever. But I believe the vaccine probably helped with not the worst, and along with these, I believe in these monoclonal antibodies, which I remember being associated with cancer first, but apparently this now can be applied to COVID. So I'm happy. I'm happy that she's better. She was negative, and I saw her last week. I still wore a mask around her, and I'm hoping for the same for Dana White.
Me too.
Kevin Lee, cut from the UFC. So Kevin Lee still had fights left on his contract. And so for those of you that are wondering, well, then why did he get cut? Because the UFC contract isn't like an MLB or an NBA contract. You are not guaranteed, all right? Basically, every bout agreement. So let's just say we sign Goes to the UFC, and he gets a six-fight contract, and he's 1-2. When he fights his fourth fight, if we choose to fight him, it's going to say Goes will be fighting this guy. What do you weigh right now, Goes?
190.
All right, so Goes will be fighting Jan Blachowicz on March 15th. But basically, within that bout agreement, it stipulates...
You trust me to get down to fight Izzy?
All right, you're fighting Sean Strickland. Well, at that point, then I guess I think we can get you to 170 or once. Yeah, when 170, right?
I'm offended you made me go all the way up to 205.
Well, that's the weight class you're in.
205? If I'm 190, wouldn't I be closer to cutting 5 pounds and fighting Izzy than I would going all the way up? Like, you're basically saying this badass can't lose 5 pounds.
Okay, well, at that point, like I said, we might as well just get you to 170 and avoid the middle. Right. But basically, goes, even though he has a 6-fight contract and this is his 4th fight, we can cut him. The only time we can't cut him is coming off a win, but we can cut him coming off a loss. Kevin Lee has come off losses. He's lost 4 of his last 5. The one that he won was sandwiched right in between the 4 losses. It was a win versus Gregor Gillespie at the end of 2019. His last loss was to, I believe, Daniel Rodriguez. But if you'll recall, Kevin's been in the news with him being very open about drinking, him being very open about the ADD, I believe, that he was taking. No, Adderall, right, for ADD?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and it's something that he's dealt with all of his life. And so what happened was he didn't report it to USADA the way it should have. And that's why he didn't get a full suspension, and he cooperated and he was open. But, you know, to be fair, he's also lost 4 of his last 5. He's missed weight. At welterweight, it just doesn't look like that's going to be his division of the future. But yet in the UFC at lightweight, it seems like he has trouble being the best Kevin Lee possible. Now, I don't follow Kevin on every single tweet or every single Instagram, but he alluded to on an interview that he did that there could be some other stuff behind the scenes, you know. So I don't know. That's the part where I'm not too sure about. We haven't talked to Kevin in a while. I don't, you know, he also makes pretty good money from what I remember. So it could have been a little bit of a business decision. It could have been just a little bit of everything. But he said he got this email, and the email was dated in November, like 17th or something like that. And this happened like 2 days ago. So I don't know how an email can be dated then. He either didn't look at his email for 2 weeks, or maybe they referenced it, because I believe if it's in your drafts, I don't think it goes in. I don't think it goes out as on the day you started the email. I still think it goes out on the day you finished it. I don't know. Maybe I'll try it for fun today. I'll start an email, keep it in my drafts for 2 days, send it to goes, and then see if it says December 2nd, which is today, or December 4th, which is the day I press send. I don't know, but I guess it doesn't matter. He seems bitter. Doesn't seem like he's in a hurry to get back to the UFC, and he just wants to try different opportunities that are out there, including one Triller, who says he's already reached out to him. What are your thoughts on all this, goes? I know I threw a lot at you.
Well, it's unfortunate, but it doesn't shock me, because Kevin Lee has done favors for the UFC, I believe. In doing so, he's compensated, though, right? They bump up his pay. And if you're not winning, but you're commanding this big salary, that's where you turn into like the Overeems and JDSs of the world. Maybe even an Andre Arlovsky, where you're making pretty good money, but you're not really at the top of the billing anymore. I think that's when the UFC goes, well, we can't be paying this guy that much money. It's kind of a game. And Kevin Lee alluded to it a little bit too. I think he said something like, don't be taking these short notice fights or something like that. Like, it doesn't pay off. It does pay off if you keep winning. If you stop winning, then yeah, it's probably a big red flag business-wise for them to get rid of you. The UFC's not really, I mean, there aren't that many guys that you could point to that you could say the UFC cut this guy and he wouldn't stop winning. You know, they just waited for his first loss or something like that. If you're winning, you're valuable to them. So that's the part that kind of sucks is, you know, I guess you're there for them when they need you, but when you stop being a value, they kind of discard you a little bit. That happens in life every day. It's not just a UFC thing. It happens in big business too. It's just kind of unfortunate. But Kevin Lee, I think, can reinvent himself in a lot of different places. First one that stands out to me is PFL. You know what I mean? Like, I think he can go in there. Welterweight or lightweight? Huh?
Welterweight or lightweight?
I think he's better off at lightweight. But that's $1 million.
That's 4 times he has to cut weight, though.
It's $1 million, though. You know, he could be a millionaire just like that. And Kevin's the type of guy that has that type of confidence. So I would think I'd probably start there. And then, yeah, if Triller's willing to give you a fight or two here and there. Why not? Why not do that? But I think Kevin Lee has a lot of options.
The president of PFL is his teammate in a way. Ray Suffo was his teammate over at Extreme Couture. So I imagine they're a player. Right away, I'm thinking, can he beat Ray Cooper? I don't know. Ray Cooper's an undersized welterweight, but he's a tough mofo, hard hitter, good wrestler, improved his cardio, defends submissions well. I don't know. And then over at Bellator, you know, they're missing kind of like, I guess, a proper lightweight champion, all respect to Patricio, but at least until he defends it the first time, he's just a guy that happened to step in and perform in a fight where the title had been vacated by his brother and he beat someone else, and that's that. I'd like to see him defend it, and then I think he'll get that proper due respect from people. But that might be more tempting for him over there too. You know, now you don't have to lose weight four times a year. We hear Bellator pays well. But yeah, I think lightweight is his best division. I just don't know if he can do it four times a year like that. I mean, $1 million is a nice incentive. We'll see. Triller, nah, stay away, man. Like, I mean, I guess if they're really, really writing humongous checks and you got a beef with someone, all right. But I don't know that Kevin's really got the boxing skills. The competition is just going to get better over there in terms of, you know, the celebrity boxing or the aging boxing or the who knows. I think he gets the rush from performing in MMA. Remember, one of his main strengths is actually his actual grappling, his overall grappling, his wrestling, and his jiu-jitsu. But goes, a couple things hit me. I want to do some quick cleanup, and then I want you to tell me if maybe I may have identified a clue here. He is represented by CAA, a gentleman named Markel Martin. CAA is a rival of IMG, which is basically who the UFC is with. Endeavor is part of the IMG umbrella. So they're both entertainment boutiques of management, I guess. And if you recall, CAA was that little group that tried to have GSP and Cain Velasquez and TJ Dillashaw and Bjorn Rebney and kind of direct them towards an association. So I know IMG and CAA probably aren't on the greatest terms. Markel Martin represents Kevin Lee, Khalil Roundtree, and Francis Ngannou. And who is the UFC beef with recently? Francis Ngannou. Like, I wonder if all that maybe falls under that too. Well, you know, that little umbrella. We don't like your representatives, the actual company, CAA, and we're not too fond of the manager. Remember, the manager used to work for the UFC, and he spoke up to Dana White when Dana White was slamming Francis Ngannou earlier this summer. I just wonder.
I mean, it's not the craziest thing of all time, but I'd probably lean towards no. But it's a good conspiracy theory, I think.
Oh, come on. There's some facts there. I don't think it's a conspiracy.
Well, what are you accomplishing, though? Like, I guess you're trying to scare off Francis Ngannou, maybe? Like, look what we did to Kevin. But I think if you're Francis, you're like, come on, bitch. You ain't going to cut me. You know it.
No. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I wonder if when they kind of just had that chance to push back, they did it. They can't do it at the risk of Francis Ngannou because he's their actual champion who's winning right now. So you can't just cut him.
But wouldn't maybe they have done it before the D-Rod fight then?
Yeah, he was coming off a loss then, but he also hadn't revealed some of the stuff he revealed. He hadn't spoken up. You know, he didn't have the USADA drama. A lot of things that happened since then. I hope it's not. I hope it's not, because that would be petty to take out your grievances or frustrations with an athlete or their representative on someone else who's part of the team just to send a message.
Yeah,
I just feel like it's possible. So that's why I said it. Ben Folks had said something, a former colleague of ours. So I'm going back a topic here. He said he's vaccinated. Could have just stopped there. He's vaccinated, so he never got very sick. Okay. In terms of didn't die or didn't go to a respirator or ER, yes. But I did want to tell Ben, man, I got the booster the other day. Let me tell you something, man. I don't know if what I had goes for 2 hours was 10% of COVID, 1% of COVID, 50% of COVID. I don't know. Whatever it was, it sucked. That was just a little mini reaction to the booster. So I don't know what his definition of very sick is. If very sick is what Diego Sanchez is going through, yeah, I didn't have that. But, oh, man, I do not want to go through that ever again. That was not fun. That was not a fun feeling, what happened to my body.
Man, you're going to have to put me through that timeline of what actually happened.
I'll give you a mini version right here. So Monday, 7:45 p.m., I go get my booster. I didn't even feel the shot. Shout out to the nurse. She's a ninja. I came home with some Gatorades. Everything was fine. Wasn't shaken up a bit at all. I drove home. I was fine. Got home. I was like, this is too good to be true. I feel good. But then I remembered that going back to last February when I got the first vaccine, either the first or the second, I didn't have very many symptoms. Nothing was pretty bad at all. And I kept hearing this booster, all it does is it's just a little boost. It's not the full version of what you and I got back in February. So that's why I was expecting this to kind of be nothing. Mom and Dad had gotten it 2 days before us. They were saying, it's nothing. They didn't get anything. So I kept thinking, cool, I'm going to bed, feel good. I woke up Tuesday, felt good. Throughout Tuesday during the day, felt good. And then around, if I had to guess, around 4, I got a little tired. And I said, let me just lay down for a little bit. And as I laid down, I felt like I was in and out of sleep and kind of tripping. Go ahead.
Stop there. So around 4, I just remember before I went down to make the ZD, I asked you, how you doing? You go, I guess I'm all right or whatever. But then by the time it was time to like serve the food, Laura had told me, should I take it up to him or is he going to come? I don't think he's going to come down. And I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, he's not feeling too well. I was like, I just talked to him like an hour ago or something like that. Did you take like a quick turn of like really bad or what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tried to lay down just to close my eyes and take like a power nap. And then I kept kind of like tripping, you know, like, oh, you know, like, did I just nap? What was that? A little nightmare or a little dream? What was that noise? You know, I was just kind of tripping like Smokey, like if I was in Debo Coop, chicken coop. Mm-hmm. And I go, So finally I shook it off and I think I fell asleep for about an hour. When I got up, I just tried to get up. And I remember, here's something I remember. Like the fourth toe in one of my feet cramped. And I rarely get that. I go, what the fuck? And I kind of like my foot, kind of pulled the toe back. And then as I did that, oh man, I don't feel good. Like my body was hurting. So I was like, oh, here we go. You know, this definitely isn't a dream. What is this? So I tried to stand up and my body was aching. My head felt hot, like I had a fever. But what scared me was as I did that, I went, you know, and I was like, what is that shortness of breath? And now my anxiety kicked in. So I stood up and I immediately started extending my arms, trying to take deep breaths, and I felt like I couldn't take deep breaths. And I was like, oh, shit. So when you have anxiety, your mind races in many ways, and you start thinking, could it be this? Could it be that? Could it be this? Could it be that? What if it's this? What if it's that? So much that I thought, maybe I have COVID, and I didn't get to that booster in time, because the booster takes 1 week before it has full protection for what the booster is going to give to you. And I was only at less than 24 hours. Remember, I said 7:45 p.m. And right now it's about, at that moment, it's about 6. So I was like, and then I started backtracking. Should I put on a mask? No, because I was in a car with Goz and Laura. I would have given it to him. Okay, I started calming down a little bit. And I just started saying, this is just a reaction. And so I kept stretching my muscles and everything. And then she did give me some emergency. And I started looking at the emergency that I had already drank, and I go, I don't remember tasting that. Because, you know, it kind of tastes awful. Mm-hmm. But then I went, wait a minute, but I can smell Goz's delicious ZD because I could smell it throughout the house. Because all I kept thinking was all those things that Dana White described. Taste, smell, body aches, this, that, whatever, you know? And so, yeah, anyway, I started calming down a little bit, and I was like, this is just a rough patch, and I just got to get through it. But I got to get something in my belly, so I can take two Tylenol. Because what they say is, I'm an ibuprofen guy. I don't take Tylenol. But they say for COVID related, you take Tylenol and not ibuprofen. And so I remember saying, I can't just take one on an empty stomach. So let me eat some ZD. And that's when I came down and I ate. And as I ate the ZD, I started calming down a little bit. My hands were really cold. I felt like my blood pressure had lowered. But that started just warming me up. And I I felt good after that. I don't even think I took the Tylenol because everything just started kind of going away. So all I kept thinking was, okay, is this a wave? Will I get one in 2 hours, 8 hours, 24 hours, or never again? I did feel like I got something yesterday, but it was very, very minor compared to that one.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Some of the other news that's out there, and I guess I better hurry up now. Justin Gaethje appears to be next. That's got to be kind of nice to hear, right? After so much of like, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in the matchmaker meeting. We'll see how things unfold, how things play out. He kind of basically said the winner of Dustin Poirier versus Charles Oliveira at UFC 269 on December 11th. More on that later. The winner of that will face Justin Gaethje. And they kind of clarified and said, hey, look, barring an injury or something, you know, something that's wacky, unplanned, then you know, that's kind of next. That was refreshing, goes to hear that.
I liked it too. I mean, the first thing you think of are the old Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling types of things, but for the most part, that doesn't happen. So yeah, I think that's something that Justin Gaethje should feel good about. I think the fans should feel good about it. It's a good thing, and hopefully they stick to it.
I agree. The only thing that could ruin it is a controversial decision.
Injury.
If the fight is so great that they got to run it back, yes. Let's say Oliveira and or Poirier wins. We don't wish injury upon any of them. But let's just say one of them does, but in the process tears their ACL and they're out for 10 months or 9 months. Then I imagine they'd probably suggest to Gaethje, you may want to take another fight. But remember, his biggest adversary in the race to the title was Islam Makhachev. Islam Makhachev has a fight versus Beneil Dariush. So Gaethje prevailed out of that whole argument over who should be next. Remember, Habib was getting involved. So Gaethje wins. Now Gaethje can sit front row and, God, take it a step further, UFC. Bring Gaethje in to just face off versus the winner and have everybody go, ooh, and have Rogan and DC, and then they go, oh, shit, I can't wait. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have to shove each other or anything. They can play the old Chiesa and Gaethje and follow each other around 6 inches apart. I don't care, but that's how I believe you can start the process of promoting a fight and getting people excited. Like, kind of like what Goz was saying. Like, I mean, it'd be a preview to something that's upcoming. Why did they get away from that?
I don't know. I thought their initial explanation was we don't want to be pro wrestling or something like that.
But that was back when the lines were blurred. Right. Now it's plain and clear what's real fighting and what's sports entertainment. Now the UFC has a sports entertainment aspect to it, but whatever they say to each other, in the end, they break each other's faces.
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, boxing does it all the time. Why not? You know, do it. It's a great clip to throw on ESPN or whatever to build your next fight.
Now, one person came out of the Chandler and Gaethje fight and said, were they pro wrestling? You see what I'm saying? Like, it's a clear dividing point now between the sport that just turned 28 on November 12th of this year. We're beyond all that, folks. We're an established, proper sport. So, yeah. Right. I'm glad that he made this announcement. It was really, really refreshing. I don't know. It just had been a while. Dana White also said in this interview with Jim Rohn that everyone's scared to fight Khamzat Chimaev. Look, I guess I kind of believe him. Khamzat has made it look easy, bro. When he knocked out Mearshart, he just kind of went boop, and that's a middleweight. And then when he manhandled Jing Liang, he kind of almost picked him up like it was his little son. He just kind of wanted to tickle him before putting him to bed, you know, like he played with him. So I get the aspects of like, oh man, who's this guy? But Neil Magny's been very vocal about, I'll fight him. And Neil Magny is a proper test. Neil Magny beat Lee as well. So it's a step up. It's not Kamaru Usman, but that's, you know, like, it's a process. If no one wants to fight you, and one guy's saying, I'll fight you, and that guy's been ranked for a long time, and he beat the guy you previously beat, then guess what? That's a move up. I was having this little argument with somebody on social media. That guy was saying, well, if he beats Magny, well, we're back where we started saying, well, has he beat a real contender? Yeah, yeah, but if no contenders want to fight him, or they're all busy. By the way, Gilbert Burns said he'd fight him. Mm-hmm. Then I think you take the fight you can get. You stay active. You get paid. You get exposure. Lots of interviews pre and post fight. You get that spotlight. What's the difference between spotlight and exposure? It means when you win the fight and you grab the mic and you have everyone sitting on the edge of their seats listening to your every word, and you can get something off, you know, your mind, off your chest, and promote your next fight. That's the spotlight I'm talking about. You know, you can talk some trash. Then if you beat Neil Magny, you know, that experience is valuable if it goes a long way, you know, all 15 minutes. But I don't see that there's really anything wrong with taking a fight with Neil Magny.
If I'm Gilbert Burns, if I'm Colby Covington, I fight him now. I'd rather fight him now and hope maybe he's not as good as everybody says he is. Hope that maybe there's some lingering effects from the COVID or something. I'd rather fight him now than wait till he's only going to get better. So if I'm one of those two guys, give him to me now. If I know eventually I'm going to get him anyway, let me fight him now.
I would agree. I don't know if Kobe will, because he's so close to Usman. In both fights, he's won 2 rounds. That I think Kobe feels like, I just need one win and I'm back in. He needs to pull a Max Holloway. Kobe needs to be so impressive that he actually convinces everybody for a third fight. I don't know that he'll get that, because nobody thought he won either of the two. He got finished in the first and he clearly lost the second. Whereas Max Holloway does have, you know, I thought he beat Alex Volkanovski. He has some of that behind him. But he's in the Max Holloway position where I think if he just can look good against the fight, maybe they sell a third one on us. Who knows? I don't know. I wasn't going to bring this up, but did you hear that little transcript that got picked up, that little exchange that got picked up between Covington and Usman? It's all love. I was just trying to sell the fight or whatever.
Yeah, when they whisper to each other?
Yeah. A part of me says, don't say that. Stay in the role of a heel. Tell them that in the back when the cameras aren't around.
Right.
Another part of me is like, nah, they need to know that we're not fucking complete savages. And if that was exposed, only the hardcore sharp eye caught it, and that's enough. Everyone else that goes to these fight parties still thinks, you know, Colby's a jerk, and Colby doesn't mind being a jerk, and Kamaru's the superhero and whatever. But I got to imagine after 25 minutes, 50 now, or almost 50 because he finished them in the fifth round of the first fight, that there's proper respect between both guys. And I guess if they just want to show some love at that moment, okay, you know. But my first reaction was like, oh, like, you know, never uncover that. There's still more fights to be had. You're not retiring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because going forward, then next time you do this, not very many people are going to believe it, right? I think maybe some people might even go as far as going, so are you and Masvidal really upset at each other? Or is it all good and you're trying to build it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would agree. If he could find a place to do that in the back or something.
Excuse me.
Who's to say Usman doesn't sell him out, though? Who's to say Usman doesn't say, well, you know, when we got to the back, he told me this. Never know.
Habib says that Islam Makhachev will get a double bonus if he finishes Beneil Dariush. Why would he get that? I mean, I guess you can negotiate. My win bonus should be more than what you're saying, or you can negotiate all that, but I don't think he would get. I don't know why he said that. Do you believe it?
I don't.
Me neither. I just think this is what we pay you to show, and if you win, you get this, and if you, I guess, finish him or you're involved in the fight of the night, then the only thing I could think of is you could get a knockout or a submission and still get fight of the night. I've seen that double bonus a few times. But who knows? Now, if it was just ruffle feathers, mission accomplished.
Let me ask you a question. Is Habib closer to coming back or further away today, in your opinion?
Further away, because I think he really is taking great pride in guiding Islam Makhachev. So why would he get in the way of that? Mm-hmm. And I think anyone can say we all grieve differently, but it's only been a year and a half since his father passed away, probably less than that. So I believe that some of this might still be fresh, especially because Khabib travels so much. I bet you when he goes back and he's with his family and his mom, you catch up on the grievance, the grieving part or whatever. So yeah, I would say he's still further away, at least till Makhachev maybe loses and Connor wins. I think Connor's the biggest, I wouldn't say fish, because Khabib's the fish. And so Poirier, Gaethje, Connor, they're the fishermen. Who's going to fish him out? You know what I mean? I would say Connor's got the best bait, and that's just the hatred that they have. And Connor seems to be a little bit of a button pusher. But for now, I think he's further away. Mm-hmm. Jose Aldo, what did you think of this comment? I may feel like a grandpa, but I'm not going to stop until I get this title. I kind of liked it.
I like it too. I'm a big Jose Aldo fan. That's a difficult task. But I think we talked about this on Spinning Backclick. If travel was open and they could do a card in Brazil, I think he has a better leg to stand on, because I think that's an easy sell. Let the legend go out in Brazil one last time, one last title match. I think he can get that. But in the States, I don't know that flies as well. But Jose Aldo has shown moments of brilliance. So I don't think he's as far away as people make it sound. Like, he's not the same Jose Aldo. Like, I get that. You get older. But I don't know if at his height he's 100, people making it sound like he's going in there at 75. I don't believe that. I think he's more closer to 85-90% of what he used to be. The other thing is, people have just gotten better too. People have gotten way better. That's kind of what happened to Anderson Silva in a way too. Anderson, I don't think, stopped being a dominant guy. I just think everybody else got a lot better too.
Yeah. Goes, I think the game has gotten better. But this is something that I've struggled with, is here's something that amazes me. I've seen Marlon Moraes and Jose Aldo go 5 rounds. And with Aldo, I've seen him multiple times. But yet I've still noticed that these guys have been gassing a little bit earlier in their fights than before. And that's why I say the game's changed and it's gotten better, because I think what's happening is a lot of guys are putting so much pressure on you that you're sprinting for a lot longer than you're just jogging, so that you can maintain that pace to get to 25 minutes. And Peter Yan is that. That's kind of what he did to Jose Aldo. You know, he not only did he outbox him and put damage on him, it was his pressure, and Jose Aldo started to wane, and his defense, which is very, very good, takedown defense, stand-up defense, it wasn't as effective because he got tired. And so I think one of the most important things that's happened in the evolvement of the game now is just these pressure fighters and the incredible cardio that they have. It can be such a weapon. Aldo has a long way to go if Jan beats Sterling. If Aldo beats Font and Sterling beats Jan, Sterling and the UFC have the option of fighting Aldo or TJ Dillashaw. Which one would be the bigger fight? I don't know. If Aldo steamrolls Font, he may actually be a bigger sell than TJ Dillashaw. I don't know. That part I don't know. I don't want to throw shade on Dillashaw, because every time he's fought, I've been in, you know, I'll watch that guy. I'll pay to watch that guy fight.
Yep, but TJ will be around. Aldo may not be around.
There's a little bit of a path there. And you're right, if things opened up and something happened in Brazil, then I could see Aldo getting the nod over TJ. But Aldo has to hope Jan loses to Sterling, because if if Jan wins, then Aldo's just going to probably have to fight someone else and finally put himself in a position where the UFC goes, well, there's no one else. We got to run it back between Aldo and Jan. But we clearly saw Jan kick Aldo's ass. And that's why that's the toughest thing for Jose Aldo is if that guy's standing on the opposite side, it's going to be that's a tough sell.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this weekend we have Sergio Pettis versus Kyoji Horiguchi. Who did you turn in for your stat picks? And have you made have you had a switch of minds since then?
No, I have Pettis. I think Pettis is on a roll. I think he's getting better. I think he's very well coached. Horiguchi, it can be a nightmare for people, but he can also brain fart. So I think Pettis pulls this one off.
The odds makers have Horiguchi at anywhere from minus 160 to 185, somewhere in between. And, of course, for those that are part of the USA Today family, you know that the odds that we like to quote are Tipico. So always a push there for those of you that want to engage with Tipico. The links are on any of the websites that have to do with the USA Today family. Choose one and bet where it's legal. So in this fight goes, I think something you brought up is very, very key. Pettis is well coached, and he's well coached to have good striking defense. Pettis doesn't get hit. Yes, exactly. So Pettis is put in positions where he can fight, be patient. There's no ego, and it's not easy to put one on him. Have someone put one on him before? Yeah, but does it happen often? No.
Yeah, that doesn't really happen very often, but I think it's going to be a good fight, and I think that kid's getting so much better now. Like, I think the improvements in his game, people talk about how much better he is physically, but I think mentally, I think that's a big deal, and I think that's one of the things that people don't really pay attention too much to is he's believing what people are saying about him now, and his brother seems to be very, very supportive of him.
Sorry, I may have had some technical difficulties, but what I was saying was I think he's going to win a close decision. I think it can go all five rounds. I think it will go all five rounds. I also think Horiguchi, he's the best Japanese fighter to ever do it. This could add a lot to his legacy if he were to reclaim this title. I mentioned this as spinning back, like he's won Shudo title. He's won the Ryzen title. He's won the Bellator title. If he could reclaim the Bellator title and do it in the process by beating Sergio Pettis, that's another skin to his wall. And he also won a Grand Prix over at Ryzen. So he's very, very decorated. He's avenged one of his three losses. One of them is Demetrius Johnson. Hard to give him any flack over that one, you know. And then one was earlier in his career. All the love to Kazushi Sakuraba and all the other great Japanese fighters that have ever done it. But I just believe this guy's more decorated than they are. Even in the UFC, went 7-1. DJ was his only loss. This guy's a stud. I really, really like this guy. But that said, it's Pettis' defense, I think, that might come to the rescue. I got Sergio Pettis in five rounds. Who do you like between Aldo and Font? Who did you turn in? Has anything changed your mind since then, since turning in your pick on staff picks? And sorry, I guess I should give you the odds on this fight as well. It's a range of anywhere between minus 140 all the way to minus 155 for Rob Font. The comeback on Jose Aldo is plus 120 all the way to I think I've seen 135 somewhere out there. So it's pretty close to even, but Font's your favorite.
I think Font is very underrated. I love me some Jose Aldo, but I like Font's boxing. I like his poise. If Aldo went back to the leg kicks, just I know he's done it a little bit here and there, but if he was more consistent with it, I think it would give Font problems because of his stance, his boxing stance. He's very upright. But I think Font wins this fight. I think it's a tough fight, though. Maybe even goes down to maybe a split decision. But I think it's a tough fight that Rob Font wins.
Rob Font said beating Jose Aldo obviously would be great, but finishing him would be, you know, way better. So I think he said beating Aldo would be cool. Finishing him would be way better. It would definitely carry a lot more weight towards him getting a title shot because, again, there's TJ Dillashaw there as well. I got Rob Font goes. But if Aldo has good cardio, boy, that guy just does some things really, really well. And but for starters, it's just he has amazing speed. He has great defense. The leg kicks, oh, man, if he could ever get them going to the calf, which I saw a little bit of that in his last fight, man, this guy could be a beast again. But I just don't know that he's as reckless as he used to be. A good reckless, ballsy, risk taker. He's more reserved, and I think what's happening to him is kind of what happened to Rashad Evans. You gain so much knowledge over the years, you try to apply it, but by the time you decide, well, now would be a good time for an inside, poof, you get hit by that guy that's younger and hungrier and faster and just more reckless, which is, I guess, in this case, Rob Font. We'll see. I think Rob Font will get him. I just don't think he can finish him unless it's super late and it has something to do with Aldo fatiguing. But I think it's going to be a great fight. We've had some great fights this year. I did want to say that next Saturday, Goz and I are hosting a UFC 269 watch-along, along with our friends over at Panda, just like we did in the past when they were called Sportscaster. We've referred to them as Panda for a while. But, yeah, we'll be doing it just like we used to do in the past. We'll be here in our studio at home, and we'll have our chat room. We'll see if we can invite a few fighters to pipe in or some journalists to give some thoughts. But it's basically a fight party with you guys where we basically tell you what's happening throughout the broadcast. We watch it along with you. If you ordered the pay-per-view, we're watching it along together. If you didn't, let us be your eyes and ears, and we'll tell you what's happening on Saturday, December 11th. We're going to do it old school. We'll get in there at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll do those four fights on the prelims along with the five on the pay-per-view. We just love doing it, and it's been a while, so I think we should come back with a proper watch-along, Goz. You got to be pumped up about the return of the watch-alongs.
Hell yeah. I mean, every card, I still get these messages on my phone of people trying to get in and watch, and it sucks that we haven't been able to deliver that, but we're back, and it's going to be a blast.
Also wanted to give a final shout-out to Kella from Hawaii. On another show that Goz and I have, the Triple G Show on Patreon, if you want to check it out. I was telling a story of the day that I threw up in my 49ers jacket on a flight from Lima, Peru to Arequipa, Peru. He immediately texted me to tell me that was a savage story. He goes, but I didn't like hearing it.
He didn't like hearing it?
No, because I told him, oh, thanks, bro. He goes, what do you think me for? I didn't like it. He goes, he didn't like it. But he enjoyed listening to it, I think. But he didn't like hearing, kind of almost like you and Richard were gagging, you know, like. Just like it was gross. Like he didn't like hearing like that I had vomit all over my belly for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
It was a drunken stupor. But either way, I'm just glad that he still listens to us over all these years. So I wanted to give him a shout out. All right, folks. We're gonna bounce on out of here. Thank you as always for tuning in. And we'll keep giving you reminders for the watch along that's coming up. A week from this Saturday, UFC 269, we're back at it again. And, of course, we want you all to stay safe during these holiday season. And keep following MMA Junkie. You know, the social media is blowing up. Our website constantly gets new traffic. Tell your friends about it. I think we do an outstanding job covering the sport. And this weekend we have Bellator and UFC, along with some of the smaller promotions also doing their thing. So keep it locked on MMA Junkie. We'll see you all on Monday. Go out there and be a champion.